Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. We're asking the question, are we the people ready to eat the rich or continue to live in a kleptocracy under the new robber barons?
Any promise of American democracy has been stolen with the theft of our labor by the new class of robber barons, the CEOs of our big corporations. When will people of African ancestry be paid for the work they've done? And when will we be paid for the work that we do, a living wage?
A political system dependent on charity from rich men in hand-tailored suits with $100 million retirement packages is no democracy. It's a kleptocracy. During the 21st century, the annual gap between CEO pay and typical worker pay has averaged about 350-1.
So are we ready to eat the rich? An abbreviation of a saying attributed to Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
That saying was used in radical and anti-capitalist circles and gained wider traction at the beginning of the 21st century in response to increasing income inequality. So we've revived it and decided to put that question to Sarah Anderson, Global Economy Project Director of the Institute for Policy Studies and co-editor of the website inequality.org.
Sarah Anderson, what can be done?
Thank you for joining us. I guess we should start with not only what you say to Joe Manchin, but what do you think some of the fundamental issues are that must be said? And I know that you actually have set before the Committee on the Budget of the United States Senate. What are the fundamental issues? How bad is it when I say crisis in America, the income and wealth inequality crisis?
We are living in an era when the billionaire class has just increased their fortunes by $1.8 trillion during the pandemic, a pandemic that has crushed working families, that has exposed, you know, like we have never seen before, the extreme disparities in this country that made us so vulnerable to this crisis and will continue making us vulnerable to crises of all sorts if we don't address it. We've seen the billionaire class can't find better ways to spend their money than to get involved in these space competitions. You know, who's going to build a better rocket ship at a time when there's such pressing needs among working people? And so I think the budget fight that we're in right now is the most important legislative fight that I'll probably be involved in my career. Bernie Sanders has said many times that it's the most consequential piece of legislation since the 1930s for working people, the elderly, and children. It also would help address climate change. It would do so much to give ordinary people the opportunity to fulfill their full potential. It would offer free community college, universal child care and paid leave, huge increase in good jobs to provide care for the elderly and disabled, help us get away from a fossil fuel economy. And to me, what makes it all the more exciting is that it's this opportunity to pay for these investments by finally unrigging our tax system so that the wealthy and big corporations pay their fair share.
Well, that is music to my ears. Well, let's start with some of the ways we're going to be doing that, and not only the way Congress is doing it, but what your proposals are and how Congress is willing to tax the rich to some extent. And let's maybe start with taxation of workers and work and capital gains.
So where things stand right now is about a week ago, the House Ways and Means Committee came out with their proposed tax increases on the wealthy and corporations. And it was a step in the right direction, but it doesn't go far enough. And one area where they definitely fell short is on this whole issue of taxing wealth, which right now is taxed at a lower rate than income from salaries and wages and, you know, ordinary kinds of income. President Biden has made a very strong case about the need to tax wealth and, you know, investment earnings at the same rate as we tax ordinary incomes. He would like to see those equalized. So far, the House is not pushing to go that far. They have proposed a small increase in the capital gains tax increase. So that's one area where people need to keep pushing them, because rich people get by far most of their money from investment earnings, not from salaries and wages like the rest of us. And so unless we really tackle that, we're not going to see much of a dent in these billionaire fortunes. People like billionaires like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk won't owe hardly a nickel more to the IRS unless we really tackle this. The good news is that on the Senate side, the proposals on the table are bolder. That's because the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, Ron Wyden, is quite committed to going after the billionaire class and seems to have a lot of support from the White House. So we're going to see this, you know, the negotiations are fierce right now. This is an epic battle. We're going to see in the next few days, can they get all of the Democrats? They need every Democratic vote here. Can they get them all together to show that they have the political will to stand up to pressure from deep-pocketed lobbyists and agree to a tax package that jacks up taxes on the wealthy and on big corporations so that we can get the kinds of public investments we really need to become a stronger country.
And does that apply to dividends also?
Right. The tax rate on dividends and other kinds of investment earnings is at a much lower rate. For the wealthiest people in America, the top rate that they would pay right now on their investment earnings of all kinds is 23.8%, whereas the top rate on their income is 37%.
So if I may, before we continue to parse out what's before the Congress and additionally what more needs to be done, I just want to go back. I still wear my button that says the 99% and understand it's the 99% versus the 1%, et cetera, and the robber barons of new, and that we are trained in a society to, by and large, under capitalism, worship the golden calf of material wealth. But what I'd like to do is, if you could really, some meat on the bones, let's actually talk about the big company CEOs and the kind of compensation to the corporations, to the CEOs, and juxtapose that really with typical workers so we really understand the wealth gap in this country.
What was really shocking to see during the pandemic was that our already completely outrageous gaps between CEO pay and worker pay actually expanded. So last year, typical big company CEOs made about $15 million on average, and that was about 350 times the pay for ordinary workers at their companies. And I did a study looking more narrowly at the 100 largest low-wage employers in the country, because I was curious to see in a year when so many of these low-wage food sector workers, retail workers, and other kinds of jobs that pay very little, but were so much on the front lines of this crisis, you know, what was happening around pay in those companies. What I found was that corporate boards rigged the rules to protect their CEOs from the crisis, to move the bonus goalposts, to make sure that they would get their fat bonuses at a time when their workers were losing jobs, losing lives, having to face cut pay, and all kinds of other crises. So this pandemic has just laid bare, you know, the extreme disparities that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. You know, there's no conceivable argument for it that, you know, typically the other side will say, oh, but the CEOs are so, you know, brilliant and they perform so well and, you know, it's a pay-for-performance system. Well, we saw during the pandemic that when CEOs didn't perform well, when times were tough, they just rigged the rules to make sure that they get their fat paychecks, despite what might be happening to workers at those companies.
One of the things that I was also interested in is how, and you made, again, a presentation before Congress on this, which was how the corporate boards themselves were able to bend the rules to protect the paychecks at the top, because I think it's also terribly important for us to understand the apparatus that is used, who the corporations are, who the corporate CEOs are, so that we can really have the most informed discussion and understand who our targets of protest are. So if you could, because the chart I looked at that you prepared is, it's scary. It's outrageous. I think people should really be able to name the names and figure out how the hell this happens.
Absolutely. One outrageous example from 2020 was Carnival Cruise Lines. So this is an industry that was hit obviously really hard by the pandemic. Carnival had $10.2 billion in losses last year. You might think that it would be a time for the CEO to kind of tighten his belt because his workers were suffering. Some of the cruise line workers actually got stranded at sea because they didn't find ways to get them safely home. And instead, what the board at Carnival did was they decided to give a special retention bonus to their CEO to keep him on the job. They were afraid he might flee, you know, this sinking ship. And so they gave him even more money than they had planned to give him last year. They gave him special retention and incentive awards valued at more than $5 million. So he came up with a total paycheck of more than $13 million last year, and that was about 500 times as much as median worker pay at that company. And Carnival is just one example. There are so many others I could mention at Hilton.
Mention a few others, too, because, again, I'm just incensed and staggered, and I think it's good to know who they are because they're probably in our refrigerator. Aside from Carnival Cruise.
All right. Well, Hilton, the hotel chain, that's another outrageous example. The corporate board adjusted his bonus targets to make sure that he would get his full bonus. So he actually came out with $56 million in his personal compensation, and that was nearly 2,000 times as much as median pay for workers at those hotels who were, you know, really just devastated by the pandemic. Chipotle was another company where the board rigged the rules, changed the bonus metrics to send CEO pay soaring to nearly 2,000 times median worker pay at Chipotle, a company that, you know, temporarily offered a little bit of hazard pay for their workers, but after a few months, that disappeared, leaving average pay for Chipotle crew members at just $12 an hour. So the examples that we put in our report are just so obscene and say so much about the lack of shared sacrifice during this crisis. And this budget deal is one opportunity when we could turn that around and give corporations different incentives to make sure that their workers are getting more of a fair reward and reining in CEO pay at the top.
Just a little follow-up on this from your chart, if I may. Since I mentioned refrigerator, Coca-Cola, Tyson Foods, talk about the differential in the CEO worker pay ratio. Again, to give a sense of how the numbers break down. And then if you could also tell me, why in hell's name do the people who hold the shares in the stock, why would they even agree to these things? But first tell us, let's just pick Coca-Cola and Tyson. What is that pay ratio differential between the CEOs and the workers?
At Coca-Cola, again, a place where the corporate board moved the bonus goalposts to make sure that the executive would get their full bonus. So the CEO there made over $18 million, and that was 1,600 times median worker pay. And then the Tyson example is just so outrageous because everyone will remember how these poultry processing plants turned into real COVID hotspot, especially early in the pandemic. So workers lost their lives in these plants doing this incredibly hard work of processing food to keep food on the tables of American families. And again, the corporate board rigged the rules, made sure that all the top executives got their bonuses. And one of these top executives who benefited from this is a mega billionaire, John Tyson, grandson of the company founder, someone who there's just no argument that he needed a special bonus in 2020 while the workers at Tyson were suffering.
Well, just on this point, you talk about a proposal to curb excessive CEO pay in terms of a tax penalty. I don't think this is in any of the bills in the House or the Senate. Can you tell us what that is about?
There are news reports that on the Senate side, this is actually on the options list as a way to raise extra revenue for this public investment plan. And the idea is that companies that have huge gaps between their CEO and their worker pay would face an excise tax. They would owe more to Uncle Sam. As a way to encourage these companies to narrow their gaps by either reining in CEO pay or lifting up worker wages or both. And if they refuse to do that and they continue to have these insanely high levels of gaps between CEO and worker pay, then they would owe more. So we'll see where it goes. I think that's an idea that should have enormous potential support even across the political spectrum. Polls show that Republican voters are as fed up with overpaid CEOs as people, you know, with different political orientations. And so I think it's something that, you know, a Senator Joe Manchin, who's been really resistant to raising the corporate tax rate, could find appealing. He comes from a state that has been devastated by CEOs chasing big bonuses while they flood communities there with opioids. CEOs who have pocketed big bonuses after cutting health and safety measures that have led to deadly mining accidents. And so I think it's something that people on the ground, even in pretty red states like West Virginia, would see as something that they would really support.
Well, with regard to Joe Manchin, is it just that, I mean, the people, you say that the people in his state would be in favor of this, but isn't he under pressure from the big corporations who basically fund his campaign? Isn't that who he's really listening to?
Well, corporate lobbyists are just swarming on Capitol Hill right now. They are pulling out the stops to try to block any increases in taxes on corporations. They have very much enjoyed the huge windfalls they have reaped since the 2017 Republican tax plan cut the tax rate on corporations from 35 to 21%. It was really the centerpiece of the Republican plan. And when they did that, they promised that they would take those windfalls and use them to create good jobs and it would all trickle down. And instead, what we've seen since 2017 is those windfalls have flowed mostly into the pockets of chief executives and wealthy investors and not to workers. And so, yes, the corporate lobby groups are putting up a huge fight, as you can imagine, right now. And we're going to see, will lawmakers stand up to that kind of pressure and really do the right thing? And all this is going to be playing out in the next, you know, coming several days.
You know, you have pointed out again in some of your reports, which I've been able to read, that I'm still overwhelmed by this. Yeah, so in 1980, big company CEOs averaged 42 times more compensation than their typical workers. And I was horrified then. And I go back to my button with the 99%. And then I go back to Occupy Wall Street 10 years ago. And also what you said about the general public is repulsed more or less by the CEO pay. But here we are in the 21st century, and now from the 42 times more compensation in the 1980s, you're saying that the CEO pay and typical worker pay has averaged about 350-1. How in hell's name did that happen? Particularly since we, Occupy Wall Street, which really, I think, accomplished a major amount and actually put the issue of taxing the rich firmly before the public discourse, and really made it even possible to be where we are with the proposals in the Congress from the Biden administration. But how in hell's name did we get, with all of this and with all the protest and people who were fighting for a Robin Hood tax and so on, to move up to a 350-1,
right,
you know, ratio? I mean, what happened in terms of the rules and regulations, as well as politically, that
right
permitted this?
Well, CEOs are clearly not earning so much more because they've gotten a whole lot smarter during this period. They have been allowed to pocket these obscene paychecks because we have a tax system that doesn't discourage it. In fact, it even encourages it. That is a key factor. I mean, there are other factors like the fact that corporate boards are often staffed by CEOs of other companies who have a vested interest in keeping this insanity going and not questioning it. But I really want to encourage people to focus on the fact that we have an opportunity with this budget deal like I have never seen before in my time over a couple decades here in Washington, D.C. And we had the White House issuing a report about billionaires and how they don't pay their fair share of taxes. And we have strong advocates in the White House right now in a way that we didn't see that under the Obama administration. We didn't see it certainly under the Clinton administration. So the debate has really shifted. The horror is that Democrats' margin of majority in the Senate and the House is so narrow that just a handful of members like Joe Manchin, like Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, can, you know, grandstand and make a big name for themselves by trying to stand in the way of this kind of progress that so many people, you know, from Occupy to the labor movement to, you know, the Poor People's Campaign and just such a wide array of groups, all the groups that have fought so hard for the care parts of this package to improve care and care jobs for millions of people. So much is riding on this deal, and we just have to get a lot louder and try to, you know, drown out the voices of those lobbyists for the ultra-rich and big corporations that are trying to block what could be the most consequential legislation since the 1930s.
We don't hear too much about it on MSNBC or CNN, but there's also the idea of a wealth tax, something on the actual wealth of the CEOs and of the corporations themselves, not just the income. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. Senator Wyden, who's the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, put out a statement yesterday that he is going to put what he's called a billionaire's income tax into his proposal for this budget reconciliation package. The details of it are not yet clear, but what we're gathering is that it wouldn't just be on salary of billionaires, but it would also include an annual tax on their gains from tradable assets like their stock investments and so forth. So that would be a form of a wealth tax. If he could get that through, it would be a huge step in the right direction, because the wealth inequality in this country is much bigger than the income inequality levels. The amount of, you know, accumulated wealth that people have at the top have amassed to the point where, you know, everyone's heard the statistics. Bernie Sanders said it every day, I think, on the campaign trail about how three men at the top own as much wealth as the bottom half of Americans. We're going to see it's really coming down to the wire here on whether ideas like taxing wealth, like making big corporations pay their fair share, are those going to be in the deal? If they're not in the deal, they're going to have to make a lot of cuts in those proposed investments that are so popular. They're going to have to figure out how to trim things for children, like the child tax credit that has done so much to reduce child poverty this year. That's just a temporary thing if it's not extended in this deal. a lot more children are going to fall back into poverty. The stakes are just so high. I haven't seen anything quite like this in all my time here in Washington.
And the time is now also for just to give us your website so the people can continue to follow
absolutely.
The
so I work
drama
at the,
in Washington and also
yeah,
what's going on
I work
and,
at the,
and your views with regard to that.
I work at the Institute for Policy Studies, and I co-edit our website, inequality.org. Super easy to remember our URL, and you can sign up for our weekly newsletter and be kept abreast of the latest in bold proposals and bold strategies for achieving the kinds of solutions that we really need.
I thank you for being with us and for your astute analysis. And dear friends, this is about looking at the relationship between reform and revolution, and we are hardly on the eve of a revolution yet. So we've got to fight for these reforms, and we definitely have a head start, and we've got to push and make sure, just as Reverend Barber did when he protested in West Virginia, at the home of Joe Manchin, along with Willie Nelson and many others. We've got to make it known through the ballot box, through boots on the ground, and in Manchin's home state, we will not tolerate opposition to the proposal that is before the Congress, and if anything, we will work doubly hard to strengthen it. Sarah Anderson, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Sarah Anderson, Global Economy Project Director of the Institute for Policy Studies and co-editor of the website inequality.org, together we'll continue to educate, agitate, and organize to tax the rich.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.